You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network.
March. We've been dating for
Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG.
What about us?
If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network.
Do you want to be my family?
I hardly know anything
about. And now for the podcast.
Every time I bring them up, it changes the subject.
Maybe his parents are poor and he has to send them money.
Let's take a bag and get you checked into first class.
Can't afford this.
So your family is rich?
We're comfortable.
That is exactly what a super rich person would say.
I want money.
1.2 million.
That's what I want.
The Nick you're dating is Nick Young?
Yeah, you guys know them or something?
Hells yeah. They're just the biggest developers in all of Singapore.
That's what I
say. Damn, Rachel. It's like the Asian Bachelor.
These people aren't just rich. They're crazy rich.
You really should have told me that you're like the Prince William of Asia.
That's ridiculous. Much more of a Harry.
Mom, this is Rachel Chu.
She just thinks you're some like unrefined banana.
No. Those are for your fingers.
Yellow on the outside, white on the inside.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kel Smith. Joining me today is Patrick Campbell.
Hello, everyone. It is good to be back. It's been a little while, but thank you for having me, Kel.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming back. And today, listeners, we are giving you this review very, very quickly. We took a little while on the Meg, and we took a little while on Mission Impossible Fallout, yada, yada, yada. But we're getting to you this one pretty early. And the movie is Crazy Rich Asians.
And as it turns out, there are a crazy amount of rich Asians in the world who wanted to see this movie, because this movie is doing gangbusters, well over expectations over the 5-day weekend, looking at close to $35 million, well above projections, which should not be that surprising to people. But apparently it is, because when you play to the demographic that doesn't get the movies that they're looking for or wanting, when you make it, they'll show up. It's the same thing we've seen with things like Black Panther and many of the Tyler Perry movies. There is demographics that want and are yearning to have films like this that speak to them and their culture. And I'm glad that this movie exists, because it not only is it really funny and really heartwarming, and we're going to talk about that, but it's actually like a really rich cultural film too, which I really enjoyed.
Yes. And It surprised me. I was looking at the box office results. We're recording this on Sunday afternoon, and it'll be out maybe Sunday night, Monday morning. And it really, you know, it astonished me, because I looked at this movie, you know, 3 months ago, and I was like, okay, you know, that's going to be, you know, a fine movie when it comes out. It's going to be a fine movie. And then in the last couple of weeks, it exploded in popularity when, you know, you got stories on Twitter and social media about how important Asian representation is, and that's kind of what drew basically this movie to, you know, the word of mouth status.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And it's just incredible. And yes, as it right now, it's going at estimate less than 35 million, but Patrick's probably in the right ballpark. It'll probably hit 35 million either this weekend or Monday. So, which is huge, because this movie costs $30 million and it's already making its budget back. That's huge. Especially for this movie, where it is strictly, you know, an all Asian cast. So,
well, and you have to give credit to WB for going in on the film and letting it speak for itself. And they did the right thing here. And you and I were talking off camera before this began. And as you know, I'm a big proponent for romantic comedies and things like that when it's done correctly, something we don't see a lot of. But a lot of the Nora Ephron films, things like You've Got Mail and Hitch and Joe versus the Volcano and Sleepless in Seattle, Roman Holiday, like real romantic comedies, real films with real emotions and real characters. And Crazy Rich Asians is not only one of the best romantic comedies in arguably at least a decade, it's also just a really wonderful film overall. It transcends being just a romantic comedy. It's a film about what it means to be family and what it means to be in a place where you belong. And it does so much more than being just a romantic comedy. And that's what makes it special. And the best romantic comedies are the ones that can be broader than that.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. And I mean, and looking at earlier this year, we had another like romantic comedy shakeup in Love, Simon, where they, you know, adapted the formula for the LGBTQ relationship, LGBTQ community, and it worked to an extent, but then you have this movie that explodes because it has more, you know, going on. It has a cultural significance to it, you know, not just with the all-star cast, but there is actually in the story like a cultural significance of this, you know, Chinese American girl coming into pretty much an all native Chinese environment in Singapore. So yeah, when you broaden it out and you don't just do it two straight white people who just fall in love, then they break up, and then they fall in love at the end, like you do Hallmark and Lifetime, you actually have something unique. And that's why the Tyler Perrys and Malcolm DeLees, and they're doing very well right now, because they're actually, and of course John Cho, they're doing very well right now because they're giving, you know, these type of movies to underrepresented communities that haven't seen that many movies with them before. So good on them. Anyway, so Patrick, what did you actually think of the movie per se?
So I actually avoided the marketing for the most part for this one. And I really wasn't sure what to expect. I knew it was based on a novel. I guess it's actually a trilogy of books, which actually makes a lot of sense when you think about it in the grand scheme of things. If it took off, it meant that you could do more films in this series. So WB's probably got a new franchise on their hands. But it actually ended up surprising me quite a bit, because like I was talking about earlier, I wasn't expecting it to be a film that dealt so much with the feeling of this young woman who was an Asian that was born and raised in America, and that disconnect with the Asian culture in Singapore when she goes to visit her boyfriend's family, and that dynamic of what that means, and that fight to try to be good enough in the eyes of his family, who is one of the wealthiest families in Singapore. And it works really, really well on a really fantastic level. And not only do you have that, but you also have the back and forth with him and his friends, who are all saying, well, is she even good enough for you? Because we've all seen this happen before and things like that. The way everything plays out is great. The characters are really well defined and really wonderful. Constance is really, really fantastic in the lead. And everything about it just really pops. It just works on a really great level. It's really funny. Michelle Yeoh is fantastic as the matriarch of the Young family, that I couldn't look away. She's so mean and so yet so dignified, and you understand that their culture is different in the way that things are brought forward. So it's hard to ding her and like be angry with her for how she's acting, even though it doesn't seem fair. But at the same time, that's the way that culturally they are in how they perceive the people that should be in their family. So it creates a very interesting balancing act in how you portray that character, and I think John Chu does that really well. And he brings a really vibrant style to it too. At the beginning, when they're on their date in New York and the girl takes the picture of Nick and it spreads very fast across the internet, is really great. And the way that it's handled is really great. And I just really ended up falling in love with this movie a lot more than I expected to.
Yeah, I knew I was going to like this movie because John M. Cho brings the vibrant style. And sometimes it doesn't always work, but in this case, it works brilliantly because of that opening scene, because you're just seeing how widespread the tentacle, I don't want to say tentacle, the widespread, like, fingers that Young have on the whole world. And it's a great introduction to the Young family because we know how many connections they have, and we know, you know, how just everything can just reach, you know, everything so quickly. I mean, they just, I mean, literally, Nick was literally just talking about going and taking Rachel to Singapore, and within minutes, his mother is calling, wondering what's going on. So, it's a great show in filmmaking terms. It's a great show of power, and it's a great show of like what, you know, power actually means, because power actually means, you know, connections. And you know, of course, you know, she's, you know, getting all of her information from Radio One China, or whatever they call it in the movie. But it's really a well-executed way of showing, you know, how big, how powerful, you know, this person is, or this family is, per se. And actually, Patrick, I didn't know this was a trilogy of books, so now I'm happy that there's going to be two more movies.
Yeah, I don't remember where, I think, I don't remember where I heard that, but if that's the case, that's really fantastic, because it clearly kind of sets up, there is a post-credit scene or a mid-credit scene that's clearly setting up for something more as well. And I guess, I actually don't know who the actor was or anything when it happened, but apparently enough people in the audience knew, because they freaked out a little bit, because of course when you see the movie, we're talking about spoilers, right?
Yes, sure, okay. A spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Of course, is Nick's sister is going through a divorce at the end of the movie, and then she meets someone that night at the engagement party. So they're clearly laying the groundwork for something more down the line. And that's great. Also, WB went all in on Awkwafina this summer between Ocean's 8 and Crazy Rich Asians. And I'm really glad they did, because as it turns out, she absolutely steals almost all of Crazy Rich Asians. She's absolutely fantastic in it. She was really good in Ocean's 8. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of her now in any movie, because she's just really fantastic.
Yeah, Awkwafina, I mean, I felt like her character in Ocean's 8 was a little bit stereotypical, but in this movie, like, she has presence, she has agency, she's basically the Melissa McCarthy character in Bridesmaids. Like, she's kind of loud, and she kind of, you know, runs around, but, you know, when the movie needs her to be in an appropriate moment, she can be the backbone that, you know, holds up the main character when necessary. And she's used diligently. She's not in every scene just like, look at this, look at how huge this is, look at how big everything is, look at how fancy this is. It's not that performance the entire movie. She actually has a character, she has purpose, and she, you know, is a great supporting character.
Yeah, definitely. I really, really enjoy why do I always forget his name? Sorry. From Community. Ken Jeong. I didn't realize he was even in this. And when he popped up, I was delighted, because he is really funny in this as well. Everyone is just really, really good in the movie. I felt every character was defined. Nico Santos, who played Cousin Oliver, is hilarious and warm and fun, and really steals almost every scene he's in as well. There's just a plethora of amazing talent in this movie that John Cho got to play with, which I love. And he really gives everyone a chance to shine, which was necessary. I felt like a movie like this with a big ensemble, it's always important to let the ensemble shine. And I think that he actually manages to balance that really, really well. We don't see that a lot in romantic comedies, where even side characters get a moment to shine. And again, I'd argue that the best romantic comedies are the ones where more than just your lead characters are defined in a certain way and shown in a certain light. again, when you look at You've Got Mail, there's a really great supporting cast in that movie. And you know those characters by the time it's over, and they are as important to the film as the main characters in the love story. So I think that Chu really balances doing that really well and brings something really delightful to life.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the best example of him working with, you know, supporting characters and giving them arcs is Astrid's Astrid's character and everything, you know, and we did talk about it a little bit, but it's Astrid's character and basically her marriage is falling apart and how that all kind of fits in is brilliant. And it works by the, and it works as an arc by the end of the movie as she comes to realize like, no, I don't need to make you happy. That's not my job. That's not my job to make you happy. It's, you know, it's my, you know, that's not my duty as a wife. And I feel like that is a powerful, you know, arc that for that character. And I guess we'll get to explore that more in Crazy Rich Girlfriend, the next movie.
Yeah. And that's, it looks like too, that some things were a little bit changed, obviously from book to screen, as I expected, but it looked like looking at the, what Crazy Rich Girlfriend is, it sounds like they can pretty well adapt it, even with the changes that were made. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next, because there is so many more stories to tell with these characters that I love this world. It felt real. I loved when they first arrive in Singapore and Nick is showing Rachel around the different in the food court and they're getting all the different food. That it just was so cool. And it really added to the air of what made it so special, because I felt like it took the time to really appreciate the culture of where he's from and what this means to them. And we see these movies a lot of the times where they're going to different parts of the world because it looks lavish, but you never feel like you're spending time there, if that makes sense. Like, every one of the Bond movies has to be set in some exotic location, but you're never really exploring the culture and the location. You know, it's there as a fun backdrop, but it's never used for more than that. And I thought it was nice that this movie actually uses it as more than a backdrop. It uses it as a character. It uses it to define the film. It uses it to define its characters. And I thought that was really special.
Same here. I enjoyed when they were exploring, you know, the food parlor scenes and they were, you know, just sitting around, just like enjoying the culture as is. They're not, you know, being snobbish, rich people. It's just them taking a moment to be people. And it's a humanizing moment. And also it shows the culture. It has, you know, a dual purpose, which there's never a problem with having a dual purpose, unless your dual purpose is completely wrong.
Right, absolutely. So it's really cool that they really did that. Even the ends, the culmination in the third act with, is it Mahjong that they're playing? Like, that whole scene is really great because it's playing into the culture of what we know. If that same scene was done here in America, it would them being like in a casino playing cards or something, probably. But
yes,
that you made sure that it was something that was culturally appropriate, that celebrates what their games and the things that they know, felt really cool and very, very special.
Yes. And on top of that, it's not necessarily important to know the rules of the game, because we know that we've seen how this character had worked in regular poker. We've seen how she works in poker, and that's, you know, we know her goals in that, you know, in that kind of environment. So when she goes and plays this game in at the end of the movie with Michelle, Eleanor, it's very much like you understand what her goals are, and that's what surprises her. It's like the scene is supposed to surprise Eleanor, and it works because Eleanor finally in that moment respects her for letting Nick go in this moment. you know, at that moment, and, you know, and tells her, no, we're all, no, not everyone beneath you is a horrible person, or, you know, right, worse than you. It's, you know, because I am doing this one thing for you. And it, you know, and it's just a really good scene, and it's a really good twist. It's a slight twist on the romantic comedy. Even though it ends very much the same as most romantic comedies, it still adds a layer. That scene adds a layer that's not in a lot of romantic comedies, but also speaks to the culture, the cultural differences between, you know, Chinese American and, you know, and, you know, and Chinese people. And it gives a voice to, you know, to that to the character and to her, what she represents.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was funny because when I was walking out of the movie with my roommate the other day and we were talking about it, I was like, you know, the movie was a lot less cliche than I was expecting. Like, it definitely falls into the typical, like, obviously they get together at the end. But I thought that it actually subverts a lot of the normal cliches enough that it's not just a cliche romantic comedy like it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. And I thought that was really cool, too. And I've said it a few times. I think the best romantic comedies are the ones that work on a level more than just the romantic comedy themselves. And that is why this movie works so well, because it subverts all of those expectations in a lot of ways.
Yes, it does. Yes. And I think that's the, I think that, yeah, you said it all.
Yeah. Everything about it works, in my opinion. I enjoyed this movie way more than I was expecting to. Not that I was hoping I wouldn't like it. It's just, it'd been a long time since I had seen a romantic comedy that I cared about. I love, if you ask anyone, one of my favorite films, legitimately, of all time, is You've Got Mail and Hitch. Both those movies I adore to pieces. I watch them all the time. There's something about them. Say Anything is another one. I absolutely love Say Anything. The romantic comedies are very important to us as a culture, very important to us as people. But we needed to see some that were, anytime we get them, they need to be important. They need to be more than just a cheesy romantic comedy made for a quick buck. And for a long time, the studios have been doing these movies with no forethought of why they work and what makes them tick and what makes them popular and what makes them stay in the cultural zeitgeist. And there's a reason that movies like Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail and Hitch and Crazy Stupid Love and Love, Simon, they're all going to stay in that cultural zeitgeist because they were important. They were different. They brought something new to the table. They were more than what they were. And I think that that's what makes Crazy Rich Asians so good. And I think Crazy Rich Asians very much is going to fall into that same cultural zeitgeist where it will transcend being just a romantic comedy and can continue on for years to come.
Yes. And as someone who doesn't really love the romantic comedy genre because of it just stays so comfortable in the safe department of that procedural, you know, structure drama that you can find in Hallmark, Lifetime movies, and even like small studio budget movies. I think the reason why the movies that Patrick mentioned, you know, do work is because we can relate to those characters. And I think as long as we make movies to make romantic comedies to where you can make the characters relatable and make their situations feel nuanced and even updated. And when I mean updated, I mean by like what's happening in the cultural climate at the time. What's happening, you know, what's happening now versus what happened 20 years ago. Because if you have a scene where a character goes on, in this day and age, where a character goes on eHarmony and does the online dating thing, or like an older, you know, dating site and they have to figure out how to do it, it's going to look, it's going to be cheesy because we live in a day and age where we all, where people use Tinder and Tinder is pretty easy. So yeah, so always stay up to date and always stay, you know, keep up with what's happening. And also, you know, make it relatable. Put some of what you have brought in there. I mean, Judd Apatow is very famous for putting a lot of, like, his stories into his movies. And those movies... Mm-hmm. And those movies, most of the time, work. Most of the time, they work.
Speaking of Apatow, one of the ones that he produced that also fits into this exact conversation we're talking about is Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Because that movie is so much more than just the typical romantic comedy. It subverts the genre. It does everything so differently, and yet it still works. And that's, again, what makes it so special. That's why we still talk about it. It's important for these films to have more than a voice to just be a romantic comedy.
Yes. And, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, and with that, do we have any final thoughts on Crazy Rich Asians? We've only been talking for...
Go ahead. I really want people to go see it. I know that there's a lot of people who are probably putting it off because it's a romantic comedy. There's probably people putting it off because it doesn't look interesting to them. Maybe it doesn't speak to them because they aren't Asian. And there's nothing wrong with that. But push outside your boundary, push outside your comfort zone, go see this movie. I really think you'll be happy you did. This summer has been kind of not that great when it came to film. Like, we ended up, summer started with Infinity War in April. And we have not even touched the quality of that until Fallout. And that was almost 3 months later.
Exactly 3 months later.
Yeah, so we've had a weird summer with a lot of really disappointing movies, a lot of movies that just never reached their potential. This movie reaches its potential and then some. This is a great film. This is a fun film. It's everything that a summer movie can and should be. And these are the kind of movies that the studios also need to be paying more attention to, where you're spending $30 million on a movie like this that is already on track to turn a very nice profit, you know, versus spending a lot of money on a film that just isn't going to perform. And I think that we've seen, even though I liked Solo, no one was asking for that movie, and the amount of money that you pumped into it was not nearly as much as what the return was ever going to be. So, you know, Crazy Rich Asians is living in this world where we don't get a lot of movies like this. We don't get movies on this scale, or scaled back, I should say. And that's why I think you even look at Ocean's 8. Ocean's 8 cost $60 million to make. That seems like a small amount comparatively, but this movie was made for 30, and it's arguably better than Ocean's 8. And I really like Ocean's 8.
Oh, I'll say this. I like parts of Ocean's 8, but I really love this movie. So,
right.
Yeah, it's loads better. So
go see this movie is essentially what I'm saying. In a summer that's been all over the place in terms of quality, Crazy Rich Asians stands out as one of the best films of the year, especially of the summer, and really deserves your eyes. So please, please, please go see it.
I will echo Patrick's thoughts, but I'll also add, you know, I was also not looking forward to this movie. Not like begrudgingly going to watch it, but I was like, I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And it really was the word of mouth, and it really, you know, was just, you know, what it meant to people that kind of drove me to see the movie. And I fell in love with it within the first 15 minutes, and then by the end of it, I was just clapping at the end of the movie because it was so good and so well made. And it is Jon M. Chu's best movie, and yeah, Also, just see the movie alone to watch the wedding sequence in the middle of this movie. The wedding sequence in this movie is like the most gorgeous wedding sequence ever photographed I'm sure they shot this on digital, but it's the best looking wedding scene I've ever seen. I mean, it's so wonderful to look at.
It is. It's a really great wedding sequence. I will happily give you that. There are other ones I love in other movies too, but this one is, it really is beautiful.
It is. And yeah, just go see it. Everyone gave great performances and the story was not 100% predictable. And I just thought it was very well made. Way to go, John M. Chu, for ending. And I think I said this last week too with The Meg. Way to go, movie that, you know, ended the summer. Way to go. Even though I'm sure at this rate, you know, something next week will, you know, be decent to watch. And then who knows what Ken will be when it comes out.
I just know that this was a really nice way to kind of cap everything. I mean, I know we still have Predator, and that'll be the last grasp of breath when it comes to summer films at this point. But we have that and The Nun to look forward to over the next couple of weeks. But outside of that, I think this is a perfect way to bring the summer to a close. It's very fitting that we went out on a like glorious kind of high note, happy, feel good type film in a year that's been not that wonderful, and in a world where things have been less than great, if we're being honest lately.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. It was kind of nice to just have something that was really joyous. And it, you know, it surprises me because it's the same reason I liked the Mamma Mia sequel. And I didn't expect to like the Mamma Mia sequel, but maybe I'm just at a point right now where I just really want to enjoy something that is vibrant and really just believes in the good side of life and wants us to be happy and wants to put a smile on our face. Maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it's okay to just enjoy something that is wanting to just be happy.
We say this, but Avengers Infinity War grossed over $2 billion this year. So, but I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. Despite Avengers making $2 billion and ending on a very sour note.
Yeah.
Somber, somber, not sour, somber.
Yeah, it ends on a very somber note. And don't get me wrong, I love the movie, but I think with everything else going on, it was kind of nice to just enjoy it as it is, you know? Yes. It's kind of nice to just enjoy something for the sake of just being fun and happy and cheerful. And we don't see a lot of that anymore because, unfortunately, when The Dark Knight came out, it convinced people that we needed to only do dark, dour takes on things, which I think has hindered a lot of conversation. And I think that's where, as we've seen with the DCEU, where it kind of sits right now too. And that's not a dig at The Dark Knight. I love The Dark Knight, but The Dark Knight opened the door to wanting only darker, more grounded, realistic takes on things. And I think we forgot sometimes it's okay to scale that back.
Well,
you know what I mean? Celebrate life. We don't need to always be the serious side of things. Serious stories need to be told. Don't get me wrong. But it's okay to do the opposite of that. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing about The Dark Knight. The reason why The Dark Knight worked is because it was a culmination of another great movie, and it was building upon it, you know, on this foundation that had great characters and great through lines and plot and theme. And it worked on that level because people were going back to see it. And it was another story within that world that people were fascinated by. And on top of that, you threw in one of the most complex and interesting villains in cinema history into the mix, and it was the culmination of things. It wasn't just the tone, and you know, it wasn't just the tone. It was the story, the characters. It's like if every movie after The Godfather Part 2 was like, now we're going to do a dark,
right? You know,
we're going to do a darker movie. We're going to do a more character exploration or whatever. And I think that's what people meant. That's what people forgot. That's why, you know, I think it was kind of the terrible idea to do a dark and gritty Spider-Man movie with the Amazing Spider-Man. And I'm glad that we kind of ditched plans of a dark and gritty Flash.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I guess with everything going on in the world, it was just, I'm enjoying movies that are being joyous and wanting to be joyous. And I think that there's something to be said about that optimistic viewpoint of the world that we aren't seeing as much of. And I think maybe that's part of why I like Spider-Man Homecoming so much too, because it is a rather optimistic view and childlike wonderment view of what being a superhero is. And I think that's why Shazam looks so good. And that's why I'm drawn to these things. And I think that's really great.
Yeah. And even Aquaman looks optimistic or fun.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, with that, I mean, my final thought on the summer, and we might do a summer recap show in the next week or two, but my thought on this as we're kind of entering to the end, of course, what Ken from the Baker Brothers opens at the end of the month, and that will permanently end summer on a seasonal schedule-wise, but or calendar-wise, but yeah, it's... But as for the summer goes, I think it was a summer of the, you know, dipped in quality, and Infinity War was good. And then, you know, it was kind of like last year where we started with the beginning with a good movie at the beginning of the month. And then we ended every month with like a, you know, not so great movie, for the exception of Mission Impossible Fallout. That was the exception.
Yeah. I will be fighting tooth and nail though about Solo. Hell or high water, I will fight for it, and that's okay.
It's okay. It's okay to fight for Solo, even though I thought it was just fine.
Well, you know, that's okay too.
Yeah, I thought it was just fine. It was a fine movie. Maybe the projector in my theater could have been a little brighter, but yeah, I thought it was just fine.
Well, that's okay. We'll have more time to talk about that, but I don't want to dominate this conversation with like Solo. Let's talk about good things like Crazy Rich Asians. Please go see the movie.
Please go see the movie. Please go see the movie. I will actually go see it again very soon because I had so much fun. And yeah. Anyway, Patrick, where can the people find you?
You guys can find me on basically every form of social media at PJ_Campbell, Facebook, Patrick Campbell, PJ. Tune in to the Collider Schmodown. Every once in a while, you might catch me on there. You can also find my writing at SoCalThrills.com and just random musings. If you really want to listen to me random with random thoughts and stuff, sorry. Twitter is going to be the best place to do it, PJ_Campbell. And look out for my new podcast, Something Rotten, coming soon with my buddy Frank Janish.
Awesome. I can't wait. We'll have links to those in the description below. And you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow the show at The Youth Critic. And then you can also follow this channel at KHC Network. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back with you next week with either a recap of the summer or a recap of 2018 so far. Until then, we will be back with you very, very soon. Right on the inside. Do some
crazy. I chose to raise a family. For me, it was a privilege. But for you, you may think it's old-fashioned.
Don't you want Nick to be happy?
I know you're not what Nick needs.
She's like trying to play a game of chicken with me, thinking I'm gonna swerve like a chicken.
But you can't swerve. You gonna roll up and be like,
bok bok, bitch.
Okay, maybe like not as aggressive.
I met a girl, I fell in love, and I want to marry her.
You're Nicholas Young. You're untouchable.
But Rachel's not.
Have you prepped Rachel to face the wolves? You know I'm back,
like I never left. I really admire you. It takes guts. Coming all the way over here, facing Nick's family. Another day,
another breath. I know this much. You will never be enough. You know, it's about time someone stood up to Aunt Eleanor. Well, you, not me. Oh, God. She can't know I was ever here. I feel glorious, glorious. Got a chance to
start again. I was born for this, born for this. Ever since I can remember, my family has been my whole life.
Rachel! Rachel!
If Nick chose me, he would lose his family. And if he chose his family, he might spend the rest of his life resenting you.
You nasty. You got a nasty. You got nastier.